Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Dan Foster of National Review Online in for Jim Garrity, who's on the National Review cruise. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Dan, we talked about it yesterday, how there's kind of good news and bad news, depending on how you look at it, with the evictions of the Wall Street protesters. Of course, now they're back in with different rules. They're allowed umbrellas, but no tents and sleeping bags. They can sleep there, but not horizontally. It's getting very convoluted on how this gets to keep going on at Zuccotti Park. But tomorrow, apparently, they're trying to take over the subways and Wall Street. I'm sure the population of New York will love that during rush hour. But the good news today, in addition to what we were talking about yesterday, is that even in a Democratic poll, the toll is being taken here on Occupy Wall Street, because just a week or two ago, it looked like Occupy Wall Street was more popular than the Tea Party movement. It was close, 40 to 37. And this is the PPP, progressive polling, so it's not exactly tilting to the right. Now it's 43-37 in favor of the Tea Party among this liberal institution. And with the ongoing complaints of just complete lack of civilization and humanity in some of these places, you got to imagine it's only going to keep going in that direction.
Yeah, see, this is why I said it was a strategic mistake for Mayor Bloomberg to sweep. Well, I guess not from his point of view, but from my point of view, to sweep the park clear, because the more they stick around, the longer the police blotter. We do a police blotter on Occupy camps all across the country every day on the corner. And the longer that blotter gets, rapes, stabbings, public masturbation, grenades, weapons found, things like that, the more people are going to see that there's just a stark difference between what the Tea Party was, what it was about, and what Occupy Wall Street is about. Now, I'm not saying the Tea Party didn't have a couple of loonies on the fringes, but the median Tea Partier was somebody who went to an event after he or she got out of work and then went and picked up their kids from soccer or wherever it was and went home and had to – I mean, you know, not to paint a Norman Rockwell picture, but the Tea Partiers were average Americans. Now, I'm sure there are average Americans among the Occupy Wall Street set, but what I've seen and what – comes through in just about every video, every story you read, is that this is the permanent protest class. These are the same people who were protesting the WTO every year when I was going to school in D.C. You know, the same people who've been doing this, you know, their entire adult lives. Who've been reading Noam Chomsky before he was cool, you know, and that's what we're looking at. But again, I think what's also great about Occupy Wall Street, and I use the word great derisively, is that it is playing out in miniature all of the problems associated with the kind of revolutionary leftism that is the kind of median view of them, which, you know, you cannot have a movement like theirs within the rule of law, right? I mean, they actually have to. So what happened yesterday is that the rule of law won out. Private property was protected, but so was their, you know, freedom of speech. They're still allowed to be there, show up, say what they want. And it was viewed as a key defeat to Occupy Wall Street because their entire message depended on their de facto seizure of private property. If you can't get your message across without, you know, quite, it's right there in the name, without occupying private property, then there's probably a problem with your message. And I think we're just seeing the breakdown of a movement founded on the ideas that this movement's founded on.
I also wish that there was more of a correlation between increasing public dissatisfaction with this movement and the president's ongoing policies. I know these people don't specifically identify with their policies, but the Democrats and the mainstream media certainly would like us to believe that. And so far, the popularity for some of his provisions are still way, way, way too high, in my opinion. But it was interesting that I believe it was just last week in the CNBC debate when Newt Gingrich was scolding Maria Bartiromo for lack of quality media coverage of the protests. And she says, "Well, what are you talking about?" He's like, "Well, I would like one reporter to ask one protester one legitimate question about how the economy actually works." And so that has been kind of Newt's calling card in the debates. And it's a good question because for the most part, it's just been a cheerleading exercise in the mainstream media. But
well, we have it's a few weeks old now, but our Kevin Williamson, who's been a contributor here on Three Martini Lunch, asked some people down at Zuccotti Park what a CDO was and what a security was and questions about, you know, how Wall Street does what it does. And he got some pretty embarrassing answers. So we at least have tried it.
Excellent. Well, that's good work on your part. Speaking of Newt Gingrich, he now, of course, is ascending in the polls as folks get a little bit wobbly, it seems, on Herman Cain over foreign policy and perhaps some of the allegations. It looks like even Ron Paul's rising a little bit. But Newt is kind of getting the attention as the latest non-Romney challenger for the nomination. And Dan, there's so much of Newt Gingrich to evaluate here, and there's obviously good parts. He's politically effective. We saw that in his rise to prominence in the Republican Party. He's brilliant on a number of policy issues. He's good at articulating things, and as I mentioned a couple days ago, I really want that in a nominee. But Newt Gingrich scares me as a nominee for a number of reasons. Number one, I simply don't think he can win. I know people aren't going to want to hear that. They're also not going to hear the fact that I don't trust him because he takes positions on issues on a whim sometimes, and he's been all over the map. You look at the Paul Ryan comments from earlier in the year, and then he tried to walk those back. You look at the Nancy Pelosi thing sitting on the couch with global warming. He's just embraced a lot of different things over the years as a kind of a gadfly sometimes once he left office that rubs people the wrong way. So you're not really sure where he's going to come down at any moment. And then, of course, there's the character issues. And I know some people are going to say, well, compared to Obama and what he's doing, that's not a big deal. But if you are criticizing the president of the United States, as he did in 1998, for an extramarital affair while you're having one of your own, that kind of destroys your credibility. And it's just, there's so much baggage there, and I know people are going to hate me for that, but I'm scared of Newt Gingrich as the nominee because I've just got it in my gut that he's going to implode.
I basically agree with you. Newt is a policy innovator, a genius, he has. But the problem is that you know, and I think he's had some really interesting ideas, but it's the kind of thing you just have to turn on a tape recorder and let him get 100 ideas out of his system so you can take the 20 good ones.
Right.
You can't underestimate that aspect of it. I also think he would just kill Obama in the debates. I mean, there's no figure in Washington right now, I think, on the left who could out-debate Newt Gingrich. Presidential races are, to a large extent, popularity contests. And even though I think in the debates Newt could bring out the petulant side of President Obama pretty effectively, he could sort of bring him down into the mud and they could try and out-condescend each other. I just don't know if Newt can win the popularity contest for all the reasons you stated for, you know, character issues, the past. And people forget, you know, he looks really, really good until his opponent's staffs are, you know, turned to the task of oppo researching him.
Right.
There doesn't even have to be any new skeletons in the closet. The regular old skeletons just need to be dusted off. We haven't been focusing on them because, you know, the media is as usual, interested in the anti-Romney storyline, and they're going to ride that until, you know, Newt starts to flag in the polls. But part of that's going to be because we're going to drag all these old skeletons out of the closet again. We're going to hear about his extramarital affairs, and we're going to hear about the Clinton impeachment, and we're going to hear about his ethical troubles at the end of his reign as Speaker of the House. And when that happens, I just don't think he can maintain his current level of support. But and the worst part about this is that Gingrich would be like a master chief of staff for whoever ends up being the, you know, Republican nominee, but he would never take the job. Likewise, he'd probably be a really effective. He'd imagine an effective Joe Biden. He'd be a great vice president, but again, he would never take the job. It's kind of a shame. His ego is so big that it can only one job that he wants, and it's not one I think he can win. So I agree with you on that.
And Dan, that's a good point you just made about his ego and his arrogance. And obviously, anybody who runs for office is going to have a pretty healthy ego, but I think it wears pretty thin on folks after a while with Newt Gingrich. It did as Speaker, even within his own ranks, and I think throughout a campaign that it would wear pretty thin as well. But I think the key is Iowa. Iowa's obviously a very social conservative electorate among the Republican caucus voters, and if he survives there, then he's got a real shot at this nomination. And if that's the case, you know, if he is the nominee compared to Obama, he's clearly a good choice, but I just don't see it happening for him. So
yeah, I was really interesting because it doesn't, you know, Romney hasn't even been competing there. The big question is, does he see an opening? Will he move some organization there? But it seems like the person who was going to win Iowa was at every stage of the game the best and most credible challenger to Romney. But it looks like by the time the vote comes around, there may not be a best and credible challenger to Romney. So that'll be interesting to see.
I wonder if the conservative alternative will recycle. I mean, if Gingrich doesn't work, will it go back to Bachman and then Perry?
It's who's left without a chair when the music stops.
Exactly right. Well, speaking of Gingrich, one of the things he hasn't done on stage, at least that I can think of offhand, much to the chagrin of Rick Perry and others is have a really bad debate moment. The gaffes are something that folks at MSNBC and other liberal outlets are using to paint Rick Perry and Herman Cain in some of these episodes as not ready for prime time because they happen to have a brain cramp here and there. For Perry, unfortunately, is in a very public moment. But the president of the United States is not immune from this either. Here's the president at the APEC summit. I think this was yesterday at the latest, explaining how he likes to confer with other leaders around the world and those who are gathered in Hawaii. Remember, he's saying this in Hawaii.
When I meet with world leaders, what's striking, whether it's in Europe or here in Asia, the kinds of fundamental reforms and changes and both on the revenue side and the public pension side that other countries are having to make are so much more significant than what we need to do in order to get our books in order.
A couple things here, Dan. First of all, somebody who's actually from Hawaii ought to probably know that it's not in Asia. And if somebody on the Republican side had said that, if George W. Bush had said that, if one of the presidential candidates this year had said that, that's all that Chris Matthews and his ilk would be talking about right now. Secondly, if the president says our pension reform efforts are so minor, then why are people rallying in the streets and basically resorting to thuggish tactics saying it's the end of America as we know it if it's so minor compared to everything else? This president's leading us down a path that'll make us like these European nations where things are much more severe in just a short period of time. So I'm not sure why he's so upset about what we're trying to pull off in some of these states.
Well, in fairness to President Obama, there was once some question about whether the United States holdings in the Pacific were part of Asia, but I think that was settled on the deck of the USS Missouri sometime in 1945. So since then, I don't think it's safe to say it's part of Asia. You're right. This is a kind of I don't think it was a misstatement. I think that President Obama likes to tell people what he thinks they want to hear, just like Bill Clinton did, you know, like any good politician. But Bill Clinton was a master at it. Obama just doesn't have the, you know, the felicity of speech, the sincerity, the emotional control, the pitch, you know, perfect psychological mastery of people's hopes, desires, and expectations. He's always had the benefit of, as he put it himself in Dreams from My Father, he's always had the benefit of people projecting their hopes, fears, visions, dreams on him. He's never had to do the work. So now that he's president of the United States and folks aren't so much looking at him as the Messiah anymore, he has to try and come out and tell people what they want to hear, but he's just not as good at it as someone like Bill Clinton was. So I think he meant very much to call, you know, Hawaii part of Asia because he was playing to his audience. But what he ends up with is a couple of guys like you and me knocking him for it.
Yeah, exactly. Good to see another Occupy protester getting arrested outside your office there, Dan. Well,
yeah, I apologize for the sirens. It's a couple of hippies down in the street.
Not a problem. Enjoy watching that takedown, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.